in 1 Corinthians, it refers to the sin at Baal Peor. And it says, neither let us commit fornication as these did, and in one day 23 or 24,000 people died. And it's critical that we understand that when Jesus said, it has been said unto you, thou shalt not commit adultery, or not, but if he said, if you think about it, you've done it. I mean, it makes this thing that we're about in the process of sanctification it's critical. You have to see that even a thought about, if you accept, as I mean, I don't know any way not to, from the scriptures, that going anywhere else other than God for your whatever, for everything, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, I shall not need. If you do anything else, then you're committing fornication. Now that's has staggering implications. But it gives you an idea that this process of presenting yourself as the living sacrifice, being not conformed to the world, but being transfigured by the renewing of your mind, makes you have to know that the battle is internal. You have to know that it's what goes on in your mind that God cares about. And you have to see, it sounds impossible, but the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. They're mighty through God of the pulling down of these strongholds, casting down imaginations in every high place that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. That's the only war. That's the only thing that's going on in the world, is waiting for people that are willing to go to war with their own minds because they've seen the emptiness and stupidity of continued mental fornication. And it says all these things that we read about here happened for examples, for our purpose, for our benefit that we can see, so that you don't give place for one second, for one millisecond, to the thoughts and doubts and emotions of your being, because you are now the temple of the living God, and all of these devices that you've used your entire life have no more meaning, no more importance. Now, there is no more, you cannot possibly ever again, actually from the day of the cross, you could never again justify doing harm to another person, doing physical damage, doing killing, going to war, anything. It cannot be justified in the New Testament. Even your enemies, it says, love them. So the idea then of if you can accept for a moment too that to withhold something from God or from the body or from the people is to hate, and to withdraw from them is to murder. To go somewhere else, even in your mind, for the slightest sustenance or satisfaction, you've got to come to an arena that says, we're about something pretty wild here. Now, this idea of what Phineas did when he caught, we don't know how many people were fornicating. We only know of one couple. And Phineas was, because it was a thing of the body. The other people were more than likely still fornicating in their minds, so Phinehas forges this sword, this special device, thrust it into the back of the Israelite and through the belly of the Midianitish woman, raises it with superhuman strength to raise a spear with two bodies on it, and walks, runs through the camp. And that stayed. And if you can imagine, it's the same thing as the idea that Moses raised up the serpent in the wilderness to keep anybody that had been bit by the serpent was then cured by gazing on the brazen serpent. But it's all looking at the cross. If you think about it, the spear with the two bodies on it will be in the form of a tau, or the last letter. The cross, the end, the finishness. You know, this is why when I saw all this, I knew, I absolutely knew for certain that it would. I knew I didn't want to teach about it. That's number one. I knew I didn't want to tell anybody. You know, I didn't mind being on the radio and doing talk shows and throwing out grenades every once in a while, but to actually have to sit here and tell you every day that you've been fornicating, that you've gone somewhere other than God for your feelings of satisfaction, for your feelings of sustenance, for your worth. I still am amazed that even one person listens. You've been perfected forever by one offering. It's His good pleasure to give you all things freely. You own all things. Everything that has ever happened in the earth and on the earth is for your benefit, that you might see, that you might hear. Anybody have any response?
Yeah, I do. I woke up this morning in what I described to myself as a state of depression. Just everything flat, blah, no reason to get up, no reason to do anything, just might as well just sit here in the corner and start to do that. And I did not know why until you started talking. But the reason is that last night, I was doing what I've done all my life, which is casting forward in my mind to find something to look forward to. Like, we're getting in the car and going on a family vacation, and when we get there, boy, we're going to have a good time. And sometimes when I do that, as I was doing last night, instead of finding something to look forward to, I find things to dread. And then I get fearful and I feel bad, as opposed to when I find something to look forward to, and I feel good and excitement. And it's clear to me, my whole life, I use my mind to cast forward, or sometimes to cast backwards. And I never believed that I'm there now. It's always, boy, we had a good vacation last year, or boy, we're going to have a good time this year. But I'm never there, or very seldom.
Man, that's why all of that is fornicating. It's you woke up from a Saturday night drunk, and my God, what in the hell is that next to me?
Well, it's like, you know, it's like that movie Devil's Advocate, where these beautiful women are, you know, tempting Keanu Reeves, you know, and then they turn into these horrible, you know, it's the God Baal that you're, you know, you think it's some nice thing that you're trying to get to or accomplish.
But the fullness of everything is every... It's now. It's always now.
That's kind of what... It's like really heavy on me. As I look back at a lifetime of nows that were never appreciated, that were never lived, that were...
Well, because, lost. I mean, the reason is that if you go future, go in the forward, then you're in debt. You're psychically in debt to what you're looking forward to. And so by the time you get what you think you're looking forward to, you're weighted down with so much debt that there's no enjoyment in the moment. I mean, some of you know a great deal about that. Yeah, it tries to encourage you to get into more debt. I mean, that's the basis of advertising. If you get this, then you'll be good. And then, I mean, it's just crazy. It's like, I watch this stuff, and how can anybody pay? You know, I used to think the last time I bought a car, it was like, I don't know. I ordered one before I became a believer, and I never took delivery on it. I think it was like $7,000. It was as good a car as you could get. But the last one I remember paying for was a Buick Riviera. It's $3,700. And it was the top of the line. Now it's like $50,000 for the same damn car. And it's just goofy. And I watch, you know, the people here. You watch you go into debt psychically. Go into debt physically. And say, why? Why do you do it? You've seen the fruit of it over and over and over again. You know, really, in a very real sense, picking up the cross and accepting that you have died is like claiming bankruptcy, except it's total. You don't owe the past anything, and the future is anticipated to be in its perfection. Because the future is always the now. But to take these things to the extreme is what this spear thingy represents. And that's what I want to talk about that. Everybody understand what I'm talking about? Understand the debt? So we have the crucifixion scene. We have Gaius Cassius sitting on his horse. We see the temple guards busting the legs and the skull and the arms, mutilating the two thieves. If you believe some of these legends, the Roman army that was there with the temple guard turned their backs in disgust because it represented the antithesis of what they believed was bravery. Again, and we have this centurion, Cassius Gaius. He didn't turn, according to legend. He sat on his horse and was transfixed, watched what was happening to the people, and he had followed Christ for the 2 years, making the reports back to Pontius Pilate. And so he's watching what happening to these other two guys, and in a moment, not knowing the scriptures, not knowing the importance of it, he didn't have any weapons other than this little bitty sword thingy that they had, because they were there not as soldiers, they were there as representatives of Rome. The only weapon that was long enough to do what needed to be done, he charged the horse, grabbed the spear of Phineas, the figure of authority for the Rome, I mean for it, for Israel, grabbed the spear and thrust it into the side, the right side of Jesus Christ. Now the reason that was done, that was what's done in the Roman army to when they questioned whether somebody was faking it or somebody hadn't died, or they thrust it into the between the fourth and fifth ribs, which whatever side, and penetrates the heart. And as you know, as I told you before, he had been sent to this god-awful place in his mind because he was getting old and had glaucoma. And so he was losing sight, and he couldn't be a centurion in the battlefields. And so as he thrust into the side of Christ, the blood flowed out, the blood and water, and spattered him, and he was instantly cured. And the all I don't know about that moment, but he became a believer according to all the legends. But all hell is now breaking loose. We forget this. Back in the temple, Annas and Caiaphas are waiting for news about making sure that the bones of Christ were broken so that they could prove that he wasn't Messiah. And as they're sitting there waiting, the temple veil, which was 18 inches thick of heavy weave, of a weird deal, rent, split from top to the bottom at the moment that the thing was thrust into Christ's side. I mean, you can't imagine the commotion. You can't imagine what went on. You can't. The darkness happened. The moment Christ died, it became dark. So there's mass chaos running around. And legend has it that Gaius took the spear and left. And he and a few others headed out because they knew that they would be considered... Well, anyway. But what happened then? What happened when the veil was rent? What happened when darkness fell at midday? And first of all, it was it. It says, the night has come now and no man can work. Never again could man do anything. Because in effect, the human race died. But more from a religious standpoint, a wild thing happened that most people don't recognize. When that veil was rent, then the entire population quickly saw that the Ark of the Covenant was not in the Holy of Holies. There was no Ark. There was no mercy seat. There was no wings of the cherubim. There was no manna. There was no tablets of the law. There was no Aaron's rod in the box.
Didn't they know that already?
No.
Previously?
No. And the only ones that knew it were the handful of Caiaphas' people and their... Because the legend had it that they had brought when Herod rebuilt the temple, he had to have legitimacy, so they had found the ark and brought it into the temple. So that the sacrifices only had legitimacy as long as the people thought
there's a mighty anointing here.
There's a mighty anointing here, and but now it was opened and it was seen to be just a black cube with nothing on it. I cannot tell you how the culture that had been steeped in the meaning of the sacrifice and that if on the Feast of Yom Kippur, if the high priest went in there and didn't do the exact sacrifices exactly right on the one day that he went into the Holy of Holies, then the world would be destroyed, or Israel would be destroyed.
Yeah,
so they've been faking it for some time?
Well, nobody was faking it. It was the same as what Caius, they were doing it for what they considered to be the good of the nation. Remember what, go to John 11 again. I want you to read that. You'll see the mindset. John, verse 47. Again, they didn't lie any more than your parents have lied to you and everybody else has lied to you. There's merit in hard work. There's justice in your goodness. You know, everything else is a lie too. They just did what everybody else does. Are you starting to see the magnitude of this? In order to see this, you have to see that everything is a lie. Anyway, this is Caiaphas and Annas speaking. Jesus had just raised Lazarus from the dead. People were going crazy. Then gathered the chief priests, in verse 47, and the Pharisees, a council, and said, "What do we do? For this man doeth many miracles." Now, there's no way to describe what's going on in their voice, because their whole system is falling down around them. These are the leaders of the leaders. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him. And the Romans shall come and take away both our place and our nation. Can you feel what's going on with them? In the same way that the temple was rebuilt, it started 46 years before this. It took 46 years for Herod to build that temple. And the illusion of that time was is that they're going to restore this majesty of the period of David and Solomon.
Would they lose their nation because somehow their religion was not...
No, the Romans would take it over. They would wipe them out, which is what they did.
But why did they associate that with what Jesus is doing?
Because they were rightly sure that if this preacher, what man, was gathering all the people, now he'd risen, raised someone from the dead, that they would become all of the zealots and other those political parties were waiting for this to happen so they could destroy. They wanted to rise up and destroy Rome. And these guys knew they couldn't destroy Rome, so they knew their nation would be destroyed. That's why. Do you understand why Judas denied Christ? Oh, he did it for 30 pieces of silver. No, he didn't. He denied Christ because he didn't meet his expectations. Now tell me which one of you hasn't denied him. He has no form, no comeliness, that when you see him, there's no beauty in him, you should desire him. As long as you have an expectation of what it's going to look like with your affiliation with him, then you, I promise, will deny him. This is why the preaching of gain is godliness was such an incredible threat to the first church. Still an incredible threat to the church today, the true church. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and our nation. And one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, "You know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not. And this spake he not of or from himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation, and not for that nation only, but also he should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad. And then from that day forth they took counsel together for to put him to death." So when you say, were they lying? No more than your parents lied to you, no more than my parents lied to me, no more than our government is lying now, no more than all governments are lying. There's a great cliche. Do you know why nations have intelligence agencies? It's to allow people to retain their idolatry. It's not any grand conspiracy of the Illuminati or the Bilderbergs or Jewish bankers. It's the system. It's the beast. So just picture this momentous occasion as Caiaphas and his chief lackey, Annas, were waiting in the temple for news that the bones of him were broken. Therefore, they could prove to the people that he wasn't Messiah. Instead, another prophecy, not only where it's not a bone of him broken, but they shall look on him who they have pierced. So this unbeliever, this one who was despised of, I mean, in a very real sense, he held the destiny of the universe in his hand in that spear.
That's amazing that that spear was even in that city.
It had to be. It was the authority. It had it's the same. I mean, remember all the things. The spear had become the authority of the rule of Herod, over the rule whoever was ruling Jerusalem.
What's wild is that in one act, you had the Gentile world was combining with the authority of Israel to put to death,
to crucify
one person.
And everybody in the universe yelled and is yelling, crucify him. It never stops. But that momentous scene with the sun going black, earthquakes all over the place, in the temple, the veil is rent, so the lie is exposed. We didn't even start what I wanted to talk about today.
That's pretty wild.
The fact that the ark wasn't in there, talk about.
It is all over the place. If you have eyes to see, the ark hadn't been seen since the Temple of Solomon. Jeremiah took the ark. If you know what you're looking for, it's all over the place. Even in the Talmud.
So the apostles knew it wasn't there.
Probably not.
And the Spirit hadn't been seen for 400 years until John. And John testified of him.
He testified of bring forth fruit necessary for repentance. Well, because we don't know the law.
Well, I knew it wasn't there, but I thought everybody just knew that. And they adjusted it somehow. Their little ideas.
The whole idea of Herod building the temple was, Herod was an Amalekite. He was half Jewish and half evil. But Herod the Great. I mean, he did all kinds of incredible things. And the Caesarea, the coastal city? Yeah, that he built the coastal city with this humongous thing that came out and stopped the storms from ruining the trade. And he built the temple, which was considered to be the most beautiful building that have ever been built. I mean, but he was apostate. Why was he doing it? Well, we did it because it was in the plan of God for it to be done. Cassius did it because it was in the plan of God for it to be done. But nothing happened by them knowingly or thinking that they were doing the will of God. Everybody that thought they were doing the will of God failed. That's why I keep telling you over and over and over again, you can never think that we're doing anything right. He's starting to capture this. What, Gary? You're going.
No, I'm just thinking that we talked at this point, what you just said last night, we discussed not being able to do anything right. God's doing all kinds of stuff. And
everything he did on is right.
Yeah, what he's done. Sometimes we think we're doing stuff, but we're not.
I promise you something. I have never... Since the day I was a believer, I've never thought I was doing anything right. And I've tried with everything in me to teach that. I'm listening. My throat is... He did this twice last night.
What do you mean?
That sort of had a little flare up.
No, it's
weird going on.
It's the garlic.
No, it's the remnants. So
the whooping cough.
Whooping cough, correct.
Our windpipes are meat. Chilling the spirit of that body.
Garlic juice to take care of it.
What? I'm going to beat you with my cane.
Take a big cut.
Fredo!